People in aged care face some of the highest risks of depression in our community, and that's pretty confronting. Though after the 2021 Aged Care Royal Commission, maybe not surprising. It found major systemic failings had led to malnutrition and neglect and abuse in some cases, which is not a great environment for peak mental health. But new Australian research shows there are simple solutions with enormous potential that aren't being utilised enough. So we'll speak soon with those researchers and the manager of an aged care facility too about that and about how it can work in practice. First up, a vital perspective in this discussion from inside aged care. Helen McGeorge is a former clinical psychologist who at age 90 is now living in an aged care centre. Helen, welcome to Life Matters.
Thank you, Hilary.
Tell us a bit about the circumstances that led to you moving into aged care.
Oh, I moved from the large family home with my husband into a smaller unit and until he died. And then it just all became too much and I found myself living in an independent living unit with a number of other units around me, and that worked very well until I had to give up my car, having been ill a number of times, and I kept having to go to hospital, and my family had to keep getting me there and getting me back and so on. And I decided in the end that it was really all too much for them and for me, bouncing from my unit to hospital, to rehab, to respite care. And I agreed with them that it was probably better if I remained as a permanent member of the residence that I'm now in. So I've been here for over a year.
And it's such a common story, Helen, that we hear on Life Matters, that people don't want to be a burden to their families, and there's issues that they're dealing with that make it easier to be somewhere more supported. But, Helen, what was it like for you when you first moved into the facility?
Oh, it was terrible. it was a terrible sense of abandonment, of grief, of loss, of having left behind what I called my personhood, my independence and my ability to make decisions for myself. There was relief, of course, relief at not having to worry about timing things, doing shopping, gardening and so on. But there was also an enormous sense of loss because I'd left behind my furniture, my clothes, many of my clothes, all my keepsakes, my books, a number of those I took with me, but not many. So moving from a two-bedroomed unit into a one-room home is really quite confronting. And suddenly, one's surrounded by many strangers, many of whom, of course, in an aged care facility have dementia or difficulties with their cognitive abilities. And so it's sometimes difficult to find someone to talk to, particularly someone who's got something in common with you. So it's very hard to find any sort of shared history among the people that you're with. And I found that really difficult.
And Helen, you're a former clinical psychologist. You'd be familiar with the signs of depression. Is that something that you had to manage when you moved in?
Oh, yes. Yes, I have had a history of bouts of depression through my life. And I have needed help since I've come in, just with regular, not very frequent, but regular visits to a psychiatrist who knows me well from way back. And just the ability to talk to somebody who really knows me and to give expression to some of the grief and loss that have been part of what's overcome me. But I've come through and I've been very well cared for here. And I must say it's none of the fault of the residents I'm in. It's a very nice place and they're very kind people. But it's not home. Not as it was.
And I understand, Helen, it's hard for your family to visit too, which must make things harder for you.
It does. I think it makes things harder for all of us, really. But they're all working people have other problems that make it difficult to visit. And so I rarely have a family visitor. I do have some very good friends who were neighbours. And that's one of the problems when one goes into aged care. Does one stay with neighbours and the neighbourhood, you know, or do you move closer to your family so that you'll be nearer to them so that they can visit? And I did the latter, but then found, of course, that closeness doesn't always mean more visits because they're still as busy, they're still full-time jobs, and it doesn't make a great deal of difference.
Yes. Well, Helen, I am so interested in the story that you're telling us because I think it's really going to resonate with people listening today on Life Matters. Just before we finish up, Helen, if we think about the reasons people might miss out on getting help for depression in aged care, how much of that do you think is that older generations might be more reluctant to ask for help?
Look, I think it's partly that, but I also think it's partly that they don't recognise depression when it hits them. I've made it my business since I've been here to keep an eye open for new people coming in. And I have found that there are many people who sit quietly and cry for days after they arrive, or who are angry, or who have various other signs of depression. They wouldn't admit that they were depressed, I don't think. That's one of those words you don't use, but neither does anybody else, or if they do, they haven't time to do much about it. And I've felt very strongly that there is a desperate need for some sort of counselling. It could be grief counselling, it certainly could be aged care counselling for people coming newly into aged care, and not only for them, but also perhaps the families bringing them in, because they too go through a period of grief and loss and guilt. And I've actually formed a group in the place that I'm in for families who come to visit because I recognised that they were suffering from guilt and grief and weariness. Mm. And that's going very well at the moment. So I'm glad about that.
Yes, Helen, that's wonderful news. Thank you so much for telling us a little bit about what it's been like for you today on Life Matters.
You're welcome. Thanks, Hilary.
Helen McGeorge, a former clinical psychologist who at age 90 is living in an aged care centre and has seen some of the changes it can bring when you have to make such a massive adjustment and change your home like that. We're speaking on Life Matters today about depression in aged care, and I'm wondering if you have thoughts on what might help lower the appalling rates of depression in aged care. Over half of residents, I understand. Professor Tanya Davidson is the lead researcher of the new Cochrane Review of Psychological Therapies in Aged Care, and Sunil Bar is a co-author, and he also runs Swinburne University's Wellbeing Clinic for Older Adults. Sunil, Tanya, welcome to Life Matters.
Thank you.
Thanks, Hilary.
Tanya, tell us first about the state of things in aged care. What proportion of people are suffering depression and how it's usually treated?
So depression rates are really high in residential aged care in Australia. So currently around half of all aged care residents have substantial symptoms of depression at the moment. And that's about four times higher than the rate that we see in the general population of older people. The current approach is to provide care to people, which often has quite a focus on their physical care needs. People have an opportunity to take part in a range of activities that are offered by the facility. But in terms of formal treatments, that's predominantly using psychiatric medications. So antidepressant medications is the most common treatment that's used currently. And we see that 6 in 10 people living in aged care at the moment are prescribed an antidepressant medication.
60% of aged care residents on antidepressants. And, I mean, does that work for them?
So clearly not. So, you know, we're seeing symptoms, if anything, arising. This approach doesn't seem to be currently working. And, you know, our research group looked at, well, what else do we need to do? What are the alternatives that we might be able to look at to address this problem?
So tell us a bit about what your study found, because you did this giant review of a lot of already published studies. What did it conclude?
So we looked at all of the research that's been published on the topic of depression and the use of psychological treatments. All of the research that's been published around the world, including Australia. And we identified 19 randomised controlled trials. So that's where researchers provided psychological therapy to some older people and others did not have access to psychological therapy. So they may have received just the usual approaches to care, which may include antidepressant medications. So we had a total, when we pulled together all of those studies, we had a total of 873 older people with depression who had taken part, and we looked to see what happened to their symptoms of depression as a result of the condition they were in. And what we found there was that people who had had access to psychological therapy had less depression than people who received just the usual care approaches.
Which makes sense, really, isn't it? I can hear a lot of our listeners practically going, well, duh, you know, if you give people psychological therapy, they might feel better. That's why we have it in the community. Let's look a little bit at the detail before we move on to why it's not more widely available. So, Nilbar, you and your team were relying on the robustness of the studies that you reviewed. How far can you trust your conclusions based on how those studies were conducted?
Well, the review is the best in the world, and we reviewed the best studies in the world that we have. In terms of the confidence that we have in the research findings, there's always room for improvement. In fact, because our studies dated decades, some of the methodological rigor wasn't as strong back then. And so when we looked at the quality of the research methodologies, we found room for improvement. And the call for action amongst researchers is to do better, to run research studies that have more rigor, that have larger sample sizes and adhere to current reporting guidelines.
So I noticed too that the effects of the therapy lasted a few months, but not much beyond 3 months, I understand. Does that suggest that you need ongoing sessions to see the best results?
That's what we think it means. We found that psychological therapies were much more effective than usual care at the end of treatments and at three-month follow-ups. And what that means is once treatment ends, the effects continue for 3 months, but not beyond that. And so we think what that means is that in order to sustain the improvements that we find, we've got to continue treatment of some kind.
We're speaking with Sunil Bar and Professor Tanya Davidson, who worked on the Cochrane Review of Psychological Therapies in Aged Care, a massive look at the evidence for treating depression in aged care with psychological therapies. And Sunil, I noticed that you point out that it's not age that's inevitably making people depressed. It's something about the transition to aged care in many cases. Does that suggest that, you know, we should be offering more therapies or changing the environment of aged care?
We absolutely need to be offering more therapies and we need to be changing the environment of aged care. Yes, both to the above. And we know from this review and the experience that we've had over decades, psychological therapies do work. And they don't need to be too sophisticated either. In fact, the review that we've conducted found that between 2 and 12 sessions might be sufficient to bring about improvement. And that speaks to the feasibility of this particular approach.
And did it matter which kind of therapy you were using?
Well, the review focused on three kinds: reminiscence therapy, cognitive behavioral therapy, and behavior therapy. We didn't find a difference between those three kinds. We find that talking therapy, in the various ways that it's presented, tend to be equally effective.
And so can we say that it's the therapy itself that's making the difference, or having someone come in and sit down and talk and pay attention to people for a change?
We think it might be both. In fact, that's a great question because it speaks to the mechanism of action. What is it about psychological therapies that tends to be effective? Is it the companionship? Is it the engagement? Is it the validation of identity? Is it the teaching of new skills? Is it the different perspectives? And I think that's where the research needs to go.
Really interesting to hear Helen talking about very clearly about the loss of personhood. She felt her identity had changed and perhaps disappeared when she moved into aged care. And a text has come in. Helen, you're a champ. Good on you. Annie writes too, having visited my mother every day for 2.5 years, it was apparent that the daily rhythm was dictated by the machine of the facility and not the personality and needs of the resident. This only enhances the disjunct, says Annie, between their former life and the reality of their new life. It was horrendous. horrendous for us all, she says, which bears out what Helen was saying, that she felt that the families needed support and counselling too. Mary from Parks writes, to combat depression in aged care, group people according to their cognitive abilities and in early morning, evening, away from the heat of the day. Get them outside in the fresh air to move about as able. A change of scene can help. Another text in support of Helen. Thank you, Helen. One of the most intelligent and articulate guests I've heard on radio recently. Well, you know, that comes with age, doesn't it? You get your thoughts very much in focus. Professor Tanya Davidson, if the evidence is there that psychological therapies work, why aren't more aged care facilities introducing them as part of their suite of supports?
Look, I think there's a range of reasons why psychological therapy isn't more accessible to older people. Part of the issue is funding. And for a long time, people living in residential aged care didn't have access to the same funding to receive psychological therapy as others. And it's still, there's still a disparity there around funding.
Does that mean you can't, if you're in aged care, access those subsidised Medicare sessions for psychology that you can get through a GP mental health care plan?
Only under quite specific circumstances. So you need to be referred by a psychiatrist. And of course, we know most people living in an aged care facility don't have access to a psychiatrist. Now, there are some other schemes available, but it's very much at a small scale currently. So we do need to look at how we can, you know, provide more funding and improve the access. There is a lot of stigma around mental health, which, you know, you and Helen have talked about already, around asking for help is quite difficult. And I think we've got, you know, the standard way of managing this is you put somebody on an antidepressant. And I don't think we've got strong awareness of how effective psychological therapies are. I think there's a misperception out there that older people aren't interested in psychological therapy. Maybe they don't have the psychological insight or the cognitive flexibility to benefit. But of course, you know, this research and lots of research has found that that's certainly not the case. Psychological therapy is just as effective with older people.
How much is it about that sense of invisibility when people move into aged care and people perhaps in the wider community might say, well, job done, they're taken care of now?
Look, I think that might be part of it. I think there's a lot we can do around, you know, around general practitioners thinking about alternative options. I think there's probably more we can do around the aged care workforce, you know, providing, you know, more training to the aged care workforce in what to look for. So that we don't have an expectation that, of course, somebody's depressed, they've moved into an aged care facility, but we're actually changing that expectation around what aging looks like for people and what we can expect for older people like Helen.
Let's go to the source in a sense too. We have with us today Sherelle Rowe, who's the CEO of an aged care facility, the Eva Tilley Memorial Home. Sherelle, welcome.
Thank you.
And I've seen you nodding along in response to a lot of the things we've been talking about today. Your facility has been working with the Swinburne Wellbeing Clinic for Older Adults, where Sunil Bar works. Mm-hmm. What's been your experience with working with them and having this focus on psychotherapy?
Well, it's obviously been a very positive experience, and I take on board what Helen has said. It's wonderful to hear her story, and I take on board what she said. And I think the interesting thing about listening to Helen is really, you know, combination of things can work and can achieve. I think in aged care we're not experts, so I think any time the resource is available to us, we've been very good at tapping into Sunil and Swinburne around what they offer, because we feel it offers our residents an opportunity. And there's a lot of barriers for people putting their hands up to access services. So Tanya touched on that really, really well in terms of, you know, mental health plans, as you talked about, there's barriers to those things. There's barriers about people getting out of the home sometimes to access some of those things. So ability to come in and meet our people and be at the cold face, and things like the digital stories program, Pearl, Elate, the telehealth counselling program, which is ongoing and easy to refer to, you know, our residents really relate to. We've had the benefit of having students, you know, in our facility, and we've really learnt from that and started to embed some framework that we're learning. Small snippets, small discussion groups, reminiscing groups. You know, you really got to put the person first. So it's very interesting listening to Helen and the things that she had to say.
Well, so you're implementing some of the psychological therapies. Are you seeing improvements for residents?
So the one thing that we can't do well in aged care, and particularly our small thing, is, I guess, is to develop that kind of statistical analysis of does it make a difference. So yesterday I reflected on our use of antipsychotics, and we're at 40%. So that's better than the 60%.
Yes.
So just looking at little things like that. But, you know, I have to put a lot of credit to the team at Eva Tilly. Our lifestyle program work really, really hard around their connections, the significance of one-on-one connections, the significance of getting around our new admissions and how significant that is. And I guess just identifying that it can be really difficult for people settling into aged care. And you've talked about isolation, and they're the things that we get concerned about. So those little programs obviously all help. We think it's a combination of lots of things.
So has it been possible for you to implement these therapies in your facility when others don't or can't or aren't aware of them because of the relationship that you have with the Swinburne Clinic, or has it been other things that have freed you up a bit?
I think our relationship, excuse me, I think our relationship with Swinburne has absolutely helped because we've had some highly skilled people in the facility, and we've taken snippets of that framework and perhaps created it to look a little bit different. But, you know, storytelling, intergenerational programs, they're the things that we've continued to embed into our lifestyle program, and identifying how important that one-on-one activity and time can be for people as well. So it's probably not exactly like we saw it, but I guess us kind of creating our own framework around the resource that we do have, which is, can be a challenge in aged care, and creating something for our resident group.
Well, and I guess the thing I'm taking home from this interview is that we have solid science on how great psychological therapies are, and then it's up to the policymakers and the machine, I guess, we've heard it referred to, of aged care to implement that. Professor Tanya Davidson, Sunil Bar, thank you both so much for coming in and explaining your research to us.
Thank you.
And Sherelle Rowe, thanks so much for your time today.
Pleasure.
Sherelle's the CEO of the Eva Tilly Memorial Home. We heard earlier from Helen McGeorge, former clinical psychologist, now living in aged care. And Tanya and Sunil are the co-authors of the Cochrane Review of Psychological Therapies in Aged Care.
Find more great ABC RN stories that take you beyond the headlines on the ABC Listen app.